Hello everyone, a good moed, a mo'adim l'simcha. On this day, Tetzayin Nisan, just a year ago, I believe all our lives, anyone that got to know the D family, either after the tragedy, or like many of us, long before this tragedy happened, their lives were changed forever. And I didn't think that it's possible to get through this day without saying words of Torah in their memory. Their vicious murder was one that, at the very least, on a human level, was three people of the same family murdered for no reason, only because they were Jewish. On a far more deeper level, is part of a long Jewish history of enemies of the Jewish people trying to destroy us. And I thought that it would be appropriate to talk about something that I left off with the last time I spoke to Lucy. 6 days before she was murdered was Shabbos HaGadol, and I was privileged to give a drasha in which she sat. And I spoke about the fact that destiny has it that Atikva happens to have a last line that we repeat. Sometimes you have a tune. The tune doesn't fit into the words, and you have to repeat some of the words. So we repeat the last line, L'hiyot am chofshi be'aretzeinu be'eretz tzion v'Yerushalayim. We shall be a free people in Israel. And I suggested, based on my drasha, that we have to stop making a distinction between what's spiritual and what's physical. In other words, we shouldn't say, we go make a living, that's physical, and then when we go to shul, that's spiritual. When we sit at a Shabbos table, that's spiritual. But when we go out to eat, that's fun. That's physical. Life should be an absolute combination of both the physical and the spiritual. And therefore, when we sing HaTikva, we should sing it once. L'hiyot am chofshi be'aretzeinu. And when we repeat that line, instead of saying chofshi, free, we should say L'hiyot am kadosh be'aretzeinu. We shall be a holy people in our land. And I don't believe to this moment that there is any sort of a distinction between being free and being holy. Not to repeat my drasha of then, I'd like to continue that thought and deal with the issue at hand today, because so much has happened since their vicious murder then. And one of the many, many issues since October 7th, has been, once again, the issue of drafting people who learn Torah full-time into active service of the Israeli Defense Forces. I'm not going to deal with the issue of how to do it. That's a sociological issue, a political issue, and I'm far from being an expert on those issues. What I do know is the halachic issue. And I'm very bothered by the fact that in the last few weeks, people have been quoting halachic sources out of context, making you believe that if they go to the army, they're violating halacha, or to put it differently, not going to the army is the epitome of following the Torah. And that's exactly what I would like to deal with today. So to make it very clear, I believe that there is no distinction between the physical and the spiritual, and that living in Israel is one of the only places on earth where we can combine the two. I absolutely recognize that it is a very complicated issue to draft the so-called ultra-religious community into the IDF. It's not simple. I don't believe it's an overnight endeavor. But I am going to deal with one little part of it, and that is it halachically sane? Is it halachically permissible? Or to be more precise, perhaps it's halachically obligatory to actually serve in the IDF under the circumstances we find ourselves. All the words of Torah that I'm going to say, every bit of it, is le'ilui nishmat hakedoshim. Leah bat Rifol HaKohen, uvnoteha, Maya Esther Verina Miriam, bat Harav Aryeh Mordechai, Hashem Yikom Damam Leolam. And without further ado, if you click on the bottom of the YouTube, you'll find a source sheet that will ultimately be the one that I'm going to be quoting from. And I have to admit, I didn't dig up sources that no one has. I didn't go to some obscure book and say, oh, I found a source. As a matter of fact, I'm quoting things that everybody knows. I don't think I've had any novelty in preparing this lecture. None, as a matter of fact. So, without further ado, I'm just going to be an encyclopedia, and I'm just going to tell you what it says in the books behind me. Anyone can get to these sources. And let's begin nice and in order. Number one, do you close your Gemara to do a mitzvah? So let's assume that going to the army is a mitzvah. Or to be more precise, fighting a war against enemies that want to destroy the Jewish people is a mitzvah. So the Hamas is coming to destroy the Jewish people, or terrorists are coming to destroy the Jewish people. Do you close your Gemara to go fight them? So you're sitting in a Beis Medrash, say in Meyasharim, or in Geula, or in Beitar, and right now a terrorist takes out a knife and starts stabbing Jews. Do you close your Gemara to go out and fight him, to call the security forces? Or no, you're doing a mitzvah. Ha'osek b'mitzvah. Patur min ha-mitzvah. If you're busy with a mitzvah, you don't have to do another mitzvah. So I'm wrapping my tefillin in the morning, and at that moment, they're saying Shema and Shul, and under normal circumstances, if I'm just standing around and they're saying Shema, I should say Shema with the congregation. If I happen to be wrapping tefillin, I'm busy with one mitzvah, I don't have to say Shema with the congregation. So I'm learning Gemara, I'm learning Torah, and right now there's a terrorist outside killing Jews, and I acknowledge it's a mitzvah to save Jews. Do I have to close my Gemara to save Jews? Or maybe, since I'm busy with a mitzvah of learning Torah, I don't have to do that. That is the question right up at the beginning of this class. Now you may say I'm a little radical. Pikuach nefesh always overrides mitzvah. So let's make it a little more subtle. There isn't a terrorist outside the Beis Medrash. Not at all. We're going to talk about preventative measures. Namely, the terrorist is in his house preparing to kill Jews. He's not yet killing Jews. Is there a mitzvah to draft into the intelligence corps of the IDF in order to find that terrorist, in order to prevent the terrorist attack to happen from Meyasharim, Geula, and Beitar? Mesechet Moed Katan, first source on the page, Daf Tet Amud Aleph into Amud Bet. So Moed Katan begins with Hilchot Chol HaMoed, which is the holiday that we happen to be in right now. So it's very relevant. And as you know, in the Talmud, there is a beautiful, beautiful custom. And that is, you start in one place and you never know where you're going to end up. It's like you start a conversation and you go off on a tangent and you stay there. So Hilchot Chol HaMoed is the first subject of the first Mishnah in Masechet Moed Katan. That's why it's called Moed Katan. Moed Chol HaMoed Katan. Namely, it's not a full-fledged yontif, but it is a day with Kedusha Tayom, with Kedusha, with sanctity. And on Daf Tet, 9 pages in, comes the following story. Amale Livrei. So in this case, it's Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says to his son, Bnei Adam Alalu, we're walking around, and he points to a few individuals. It happens to be, as I wrote in parentheses, Rabbi Yonatan ben Amitai and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim. Anashim shel Tzurahim. These are very important individuals. These are Gedolei Yisrael. Thus, Zil gabehun delivrochu. Go to them to get a bracha. I'm sure you've had the privilege of getting on the plane and you happen to see one of the Gdolei Yisrael, Hasidic Rebbe, and you encourage your children or your grandchildren, go get a bracha from this great rabbi. So, Rab Shimon ben Yochai's son, Azal, did what his father said and went to these great rabbis. Ashkechehinu, when he got there, this is what he saw. The karamu karau adade. He saw they were discussing psukim. What do great rabbis do with each other? They don't just exchange scores of the Mets versus the Yankees. They talk in learning. So they were talking psukim. They were quoting psukim one to the other. And this is what they were saying. K'tiv, pales me'al raglecha, v'chol derachecha yachinu, v'ch'tiv orechayim pen tifales. So Rashi says, on that Gemara, what does the first pasuk mean? Klomar, shkol mitzvah ve'ayen bahen, eze mitzvah gdola ve'aseh gdola. Anytime you have a few mitzvot to do, you have to prioritize. Which mitzvah is a big mitzvah? Which mitzvah is a small mitzvah? Which mitzvah can you do later? Which mitzvah do you have to do now? And then you know what to do first, what to do second, what to do third. Namely, when you get up in the morning. This morning, we had many mitzvot to do. You have to put on tzitzis. Well, tzitzis is a mitzvah, but you don't have to do it. If you put on a four-cornered garment, you make a bracha. It's a kiyum mitzvah. Next, davening. Davening is a mitzvah. It's actually an obligation. As a matter of fact, if you don't daven within the first four relative hours of the day since sunrise, you preferably should not daven. If you missed it, then you can daven until midday. So davening should be up there, because if you don't daven on time, maybe you've missed it. Next, Kriyat Shema. Whoa, Kriyat Shema is only 3 relative hours. That should come before davening. Continue. I got to eat breakfast. Simchas Yontif. I got to eat a good meal. Maybe there's a mitzvah to eat matzah all the 7 days of Pesach. Well, let's see. Can I eat matzah all day? Yeah. So davening, only 4 hours. Kriyat Shema, only 3 hours. Matzah, maybe a mitzvah, maybe not. So what should I do first? I guess I should say Kriyat Shema on time, then daven, then I'll eat matzah. As a matter of fact, you know how to eat matzah before you daven anyway. So it makes sense. So the first pasuk says, "Pales ma'agal raglecha v'chol derachecha yachinu." You have to prioritize. You have to have triage in mitzvot, because if you don't, you're going to miss out. If I would have said as I got up in the morning, hey, you know what's the most important thing for a Jew to do? To daven. Davening, this is the most important thing in the world. Well, I would have davened. Maybe I would have missed Zman Kriyat Shema. Kriyat Shema happens to be a mitzvah d'oraita, a biblical commandment. Davening, according to the Ramban, at least, is a mitzvah derabanan. As a matter of fact, since I davened Ma'ariv last night, maybe it's a mitzvah derabanan even according to the Rambam. Well, I would have missed out on Kriyat Shema d'oraita if 3 hours would have gone by. So says the first pasuk, "Pales mi'al raglecha v'chol derachecha yachinu," prioritize. Got it. That's Rashi on our Gemara, Perush Rashi. On this particular page in Masechet Moed Katan, there's another Perush Rashi in the Ktav Yad. And this Perush Rashi has something that's a little more relevant for us. This Perush Rashi says something a little different. Im bata mitzvah liyadecha, chshov eze mihen oseh. Im la'asot et mitzvah, o leishev la'asok batorah. Says this Perush Rashi that ultimately, this is not a general prioritize in mitzvot dilemma, but rather, this is specific to our actual deliberation. Namely, you have to prioritize between doing mitzvot and learning Torah. So assuming that going into the IDF and saving Jews is a mitzvah, you have to prioritize. Is learning Torah more important, or doing the mitzvah of saving Jews more important? That's one pasuk. Now comes the other pasuk. Tanakh is pretty full. You can't make a whole case all out of one pasuk, and that's exactly what I said in my introduction. Don't quote things out of context. There's many, many, many psukim in the 24 books of Tanakh. And these rabbis were honest. They quoted both. V'chtiv, orechayim pentifales, Rashi in his first Perush, namely the regular Rashi on the Gemara, says, "Demashma kol mitzvah shetavol liyadcha aseuta ben gdola ben ktana v'al taniach ktana b'pnei gdola." Says this pasuk, don't prioritize. You got a mitzvah, do it. You get up in the morning, you see tzitzis, put them on. Don't start making lumdas. It's not really a chiyuv. Only if I put them on, I do a chiyuv. Do it. There's a mitzvah, do it. No triage. Rashi in the Ktav Yad, who, as you remember, in the first pasuk said that the dilemma is, should I learn Torah or should I do mitzvot, says here the following: Orech Hayim, Torah, Pentifales, Shehi Kodemet L'chol, Davar Shei Efshar La'asota, Pales, Ve'ose Mitzvah Pentit Batel. Namely, according to this particular pasuk, Torah comes first to everything that you cannot do afterwards. Namely, if there's a mitzvah that cannot be done, you must do the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah could be done somehow afterwards or by others, then you don't have to do the mitzvah. So we have two psukim from our perspective that are important. One is a pasuk that says you have a dilemma. Is learning Torah more important than doing mitzvot? Or is mitzvot more important than learning Torah? And we have another pasuk that says, well, learning Torah happens to be more important as long as you can do the mitzvah somehow, either yourself later or by others. But if there is a situation in which that mitzvah cannot be done either by yourself or by others, then you have to do the mitzvah. So according to these two great rabbis that Rav Shimon ben Yochai said to his son, get a bracha from, mitzvot, namely doing a mitzvah, is more important, because everyone agrees that if the mitzvah can't be done, you must do it. The dilemma is, if the mitzvah could be done by others, or if the mitzvah could be done later, does Torah come first? That's the dilemma. Anyway, the Gemara says these are two psukim, seems to contradict with one another. Lo kasha, kan b'mitzvah she'efshar la'asota yidei acherim, kan b'mitzvah she'efshar la'asota yidei acherim. The Gemara says there's no real contradiction. The bottom line is that, and I quote, if the mitzvah could be done by others, you should continue learning. But if the mitzvah can't be done by others, you got to get up and do it. From our perspective, going back to our example, you're sitting in a Beis Medrash in Mei Yesharim, there's a terrorist outside. If someone else has a gun, you should go take care of the terrorist, continue learning. If no one else has a gun, except for you, you should go out and kill the terrorist. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara continues, Habiyatvei become Ibailuhu. So they were sitting, and here was the following question. Yekarahi mipninim v'chol chafatzeha lo yeshvu ba. V'chtiv v'chol chafatzim lo yeshvu ba. In other words, the Torah either is so amazing that nothing ever could be like it, or the Torah is great, but when you have a mitzvah, you go ahead and you do the mitzvah and you do not continue learning. That's the contradiction. Comes along the Gemara and says again the same answer. Kan b'mitzvah she'efshar la'asota al yidei acherim. Kan b'mitzvah she'efshar la'asota al yidei acherim. Again, the Gemara comes to the same conclusion. And that is, once again, learning Torah is very important. And no one in their right mind would ever say it's not. Whoever says that is not part of this discussion, because they don't see any real value in learning Torah. The only ones that are part of this discussion is people that see value in learning Torah. And the question is, well, is there also value in doing army? Comes along the Gemara and says, when there's a mitzvah that comes against learning Torah, then you have to go and ask the following question. Can the mitzvah be done by others or not? If it can, I should continue learning. If it can't, I have to get up and do the mitzvah. So, case scenario, Sunday night, we had a mitzvah called Bedikat Chametz, checking for Chametz, which obligated all of us to clean our homes for Pesach. That's not a mitzvah that can be done by others. That's a mitzvah upon me, since I'm a house owner. It's upon every yeshiva bacher. They have to close their gemaras and do it, unless they nominated someone to do it in their place. On the other hand, the army needs X amount of soldiers. If there are X amount of soldiers without the yeshiva bachers, theoretically, they should continue learning. Right now, however, came along the army and said, we need more bodies, because the security situation changed radically after October 7th, and we just need more soldiers. Period. We need more soldiers. We don't have enough. Therefore, this is not Ifshah La'asota al yedei acherim anymore. The army needs every 18-year-old able body to draft into active service in order to serve the needs of the security of the state of Israel. From this perspective, even though learning Torah is important, and we saw many sources that say that, going into the army now is an obligation. Ifshah La'asota al yedei acherim, it can't be done by others. This is what the Bavli says in Masechet Moed Katan. Just in case you think that the Yerushalmi Talmud has a different version, in the Jerusalem Talmud, we have the following in the name of no other than Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, the gentleman who said, go to these great rabbis and get a bracha in our Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan b'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, kigon anu shanu asukim b'talmud Torah, afilu rekriyat shma, ein anu mafsikin. He said, since I am totally immersed in learning Torah, I never stop for anything, including Kriyat Shema in the morning. So imagine, Rav Shimon ben Yochai got up in the morning, he opened up his Gemara, he didn't daven, he didn't say Kriyat Shema, he didn't put on tefillin, he learned full time. Because learning Torah, he's doing a mitzvah, he doesn't have to do anything else. Rabbi Yochanan Amaral Gor Grame Kegon Anu She'en Anu Asukim B'Talmud Torah Afilu L'Tfila Anu Mafsikin. He said, me, I am not busy with Talmud Torah, so of course I stop for everything, including davening. Okay. So the Gemara asks, as it goes on, V'lomudeh Rashbi, and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai doesn't agree, She'mafsikin La'asot Tzukah V'La'asot Lulav? The Gemara says, not do you stop to do the mitzvah of shaking olulav. The Gemara says, he doesn't agree that you stop to build, not sit, build a sukkah and make a lulav, tie the hadasim and the aravel to the lulav. Namely, we're not talking here about the mitzvah of shaking it. We're talking about the mitzvah of heksher mitzvah, of making it. We're not talking about the mitzvah of sitting and dwelling in the sukkah. We're talking about the mitzvah, so-called mitzvah, of getting it ready before sukkahs. The Gemara answers, the Gemara continues, V'leit le'le Rashbi, ha'lameid al minat la'asot ve'lo ha'lameid shelo la'asot, sha'alimed shelo la'asot noach lo shelo nivra. Rashbi doesn't agree that if someone learns Torah and doesn't fulfill one word of what he learns, namely, he's not going to fulfill any of the mitzvot because he's learning. It's better he wasn't created. Namely, he came to the wrong place. Could be up in Shemayim. They learn Torah, and they don't do mitzvot. Down here on earth, God made us here in order to do mitzvot. So if you're learning Torah, and you're not doing mitzvot, you have the wrong address. You're in the wrong place. It's better you weren't created, no more, no less. In other words, the Gemara in the Yerushalmi heard the words of Rashbi and said, are you out of your mind? You don't stop to daven, to say Kriyat Shema, to put on tefillin, to get your sukkah ready? Let's continue, to make a seder? The Gemara answers, "Rama Rabbi Yochanan, Halemai Shelo Lasot Noach Lo Ilu Neepecha Shil Yato Al Panav Lo Yatzal Olam." Said Rabbi Yochanan, if this is your perspective, then it's better not only that you weren't created, but if you actually were created and you came into the world, it's better that you died in childbirth. Wow. Pretty radical. Pretty radical. So if in the Bavli we heard, you know, as long as the mitzvah was done by someone, it's okay. Here, the Gemara in the Yerushalmi says, if you learn and you don't fulfill the mitzvot of what you're learning, it's better you weren't created. Tama de Rashbi, ze shinun, veze shinun, ve'enom bevatel shinun, mipnei shinun. The Gemara answers that Rashbi only said what he said regarding Kriyat Shema. Namely, every other mitzvah he stopped for and he did. 612 mitzvot he did. There's one little mitzvah he didn't. Why? Because he thought or assumed that the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema is to learn Torah. Twice a day you learn Torah. You say three parshiot from the Torah, Shema, Vayayim, Shamoah, and Vayomer. So what's the difference if I say that, or I learn some other part of Torah? So only with regard to Kriyat Shema did he say what he said. But any other part of Torah, any other mitzvah, he wouldn't have said that. So he stopped to do a Seder, he stopped for Bedikat Chametz, he stopped to Daven, he stopped to Shake Lulav, he stopped to build a Sukkah, he probably stopped to clean for Pesach, and, based on what we're dealing with, he probably stopped to fight against enemies of the Jewish people. So many have quoted in the last few days the Gemara and Megillah that's repeated in Eruvin, that Yehoshua, not me, Yehoshua, who took over from Moshe Rabbeinu, who we read about on the first day of Pesach, Yehoshua bin Nun, was reprimanded by that famous angel when he came into Israel for various things. Amongst them, the Gemara says, he was in Yericho, and he was reprimanded because the people did not learn Torah. From here we learn, said certain people, that you're supposed to learn Torah during war, because the Jewish people were in the middle of war, they were capturing Israel. God sent down an angel to reprimand Yehoshua for not learning Torah. That's what the Gemara says twice in Shas, in Masechet Megillah, and Masechet Eruvin. Well, let's see the Gemara. The Gemara does indeed say that the Malach reprimanded Yehoshua for a few different things. One of them was Bitaltem Talmud Torah. That's what the Gemara says. I was taught as a kid, and then as a yeshiva bacher, and then as a rabbi. Always learned the Gemara with Rashi. So what does Rashi say both in Eruvin and in Megillah? He says, and I quote, Shehu Laila Hayalachem La'asok BaTorah Sha'arei Enchem Nilchamim BaLaila. Rashi doesn't say that during the day you should all learn Torah and not fight. No! During the day, you fight. But during the night, there's no night vision. This is Yehoshua bin Nun. This is not 2024. So at night, you're not fighting. At night, you should have a shir. You should learn Torah. But during the day, you're soldiers, and soldiers fight during the day. And just in case you think this was a slip of the pen, just in case you think Rashi, had a nice little svara, Rashi repeats this in Masechet Eruvin, the same Gemara. Rashi says this, and even more elaborate. Ve'achshav shecha shecha, now it's nighttime. Atem mevatlim Talmud Torah, you're not learning? Lefi shehayu asukim b'milchama b'yom, lo ayalahem eit lasuk b'torah ela b'layla. I quote again, Lefi shehayu asukim b'milchama b'yom, lo ayu eit lasuk b'torah ela b'layla. Namely, the Jewish people in the time of Yehoshua had a mitzvah to capture Israel. No one in their right mind thought that this mitzvah should be done by someone else, because everyone, every Jew, has to do a mitzvah. According to Yerushalmi, if you think that, it's better you weren't created. According to the Bavli, it's only if it could be done by others. And if the army needs you, you need to fight. So all the Jews were fighting. They all got up and they fought. But at night they weren't fighting. So instead of sitting around doing nothing, they should have used the night in a more efficient way. One of the many, many things that this Malach reprimanded Yehoshua was at night. He did not teach Torah. And they were mevatel from Talmud Torah at night. Night is not a time that's neutral. Night is also a time to learn Torah. And therefore, what do we learn from this? This Gemara is not any sort of proof that, oh, you're supposed to learn at a time of war. This is the Gemara, a proof that when you're not fighting, you should learn. But during the day when you're fighting, of course you're not learning. You're fighting. If anything, this is a proof that soldiers in uniform at night should be taking a Gemara and learning Daf Yomi, if they're physically able to. But this is not a proof that you shouldn't fight. This is a proof that you should fight, but at your free time, you should learn. So I think we established in the last half hour very clearly that a Jew is put on this earth to do mitzvot. He learns to do mitzvot. According to the Babli, if, maybe, the mitzvah could be done by someone else, he should learn Torah. According to the Yerushalmi, uncanny, not even a possibility. It's better you shouldn't have been created. But according to the Babli, if maybe someone else can do the mitzvah, then he doesn't have to do it. Since the IDF says we need every able body, and if not, every Jew in Israel is going to have to do double, triple, quadruple reserve duty, extra compulsory service, which is impossible. It seems like the mitzvah cannot be done by others. And therefore, everyone has to go in and do this mitzvah of saving Jews. Okay. If that's the case, here's my question. I assume now that we are put on this earth to do mitzvot. And there's no way to get out of this particular mitzvah. It can't be done by others. Is this always the case? Or is there a way to get out of it? Mainly, is it always that a Jew has to do mitzvot if a mitzvah comes his way and it can't be done by others, or not? The Rambam says, Hayalefanav asiyat mitzvah v'talmud Torah. Im efshar l'mitzvah lehiyasot al yedei achirim, lo yapsik talmudo. V'im lav yaaseh ha-mitzvah v'yachzor l'talmudo. The Rambam says he has two things in hand. He has a mitzvah and he has Talmud Torah. A person has two things to do. A mitzvah, say, I don't know, put on tefillin and learn. If the mitzvah could be done by others, he should not stop learning. But if the mitzvah can't be done by others, then he should do the mitzvah and then go back to learning. Exactly what we learned in Moed Katan, the Bavli. Fine. No problem. Comes along the Meiri and says, Afal pi shamru ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. Even though we learned that if you're busy with one mitzvah, you don't have to do another. Ein Talmud Torah bichlal ze. The Meiri goes on to prove that Talmud Torah is not part of that ironclad rule. If you're busy with one mitzvah, you don't have to do another, does not apply to Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is special. Why is it special? I can give many reasons. Bottom line is, learning Torah does not exempt you from doing other mitzvot. So if you're busy, say, with the mitzvah of putting on tefillin, and a guy comes to collect tzedakah, maybe you're exempt from giving tzedakah. But if you're busy learning and someone comes by to collect tzedakah, you're not exempt from giving tzedakah. On the other hand, the Rambam himself comes along and says, Ha'ish mitzuveh al priyah u'rviyah. A person is obligated to have children. We've been 17 from 17. Kivan shavru esim shana v'lonas ha'isha ha'reza ober mevatel mitzvah taseh. From the time he's 20, if he doesn't fulfill this mitzvah, he is mevatel a mitzvah taseh. He is physically not fulfilling a positive commandment. milisa isha, kedei shelo yitrach b'mzanot v'yivatel min haTorah, harei ze mutar lehit acher, sha'osek b'mitzvah patur min haMitzvah, v'kol sheken b'talmud Torah. So comes along the Rambam and says, when it comes to one mitzvah, and one mitzvah alone, priya u'reviya, having children, you're allowed to what? Lehit acher, to push it off. Only if you're learning Torah, and you don't want to be busied with making a living and having means for your children to live on. In other words, outside of that mitzvah, the Rambam does not allow you to say, I'm learning Torah, so I'm exempt. Now, what do we learn from this? So far, we've learned two ironclad rules. Number one, we were put on this earth to do mitzvot. And learning Torah does not exempt you from doing mitzvot. The only time it exempts you is A, if the mitzvah could be done by others, maybe, only according to the Bavli. And number two, if you want to push it off regarding having children. Those are the only two. Outside of those, there's no such thing. So, if it can't be done by others, and it's not the mitzvah of having children, then you have to do the mitzvah. If that's the case, it's not surprising that I've never seen a yeshiva in all my years that have said, now that you're in a yeshiva and you're learning full time, you don't have to daven, you don't have to go ahead and check for chametz, you don't have to light Hanukkah candles, you don't have to hear the Megillah on Purim, let alone eat a seuda. Everyone does mitzvot. There's no such thing as you're learning Torah, you don't do mitzvot. Nobody, no yeshiva, invokes this rule. It seems to me that the only time that they invoke this rule is going to be in one case alone, and that is the mitzvah of going to the army. So either they assume that going to the army is not a mitzvah at all, could be, or they assume that indeed everything we said is false and they have some source I've never seen. But I doubt it. So assuming that I doubt it, I guess the question is, does indeed they have an exemption that we didn't think of? Namely, maybe it's true regarding 613 mitzvot. It's true that you have to stop learning and go and do the mitzvah. But perhaps, if you're a yeshiva bacher, you're part of an elite part of the Jewish people, that does not have to stop and do mitzvot. In other words, all the Jewish people, regardless of age, regardless of kippah, have to stop learning Torah to do mitzvot. Either that's the reason we were put on earth, or it cannot be done by others. Whatever the reason is, including going to the army. And going to the army is a mitzvah. It's saving Jews. But there's an elite tribe within the Jewish people. We're going to call them Shevet Levi. And they're the only ones that don't have to do it. In other words, even though it's a mitzvah, and even though it cannot be done by others, the army says they need more able bodies, there's a group called Shevet Levi. They are exempt, regardless of the regular rules. So we have yeshiva bachers, and they never use this exemption. In other words, they listen to the Megillah on Purim, and they stop learning Torah to do it. And they lit Hanukkah candles on Hanukkah, and they stop learning Torah to light, and on time. They closed their gemaras at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They went to light Hanukkah candles on time. And on Rosh Hashanah, they davened, and they heard shofar. And on Yom Kippur, they davened and they fasted, even though it hurt their learning. And on Sukkot, they went to sit in a sukkah, and they shook lulav. But when it came to one thing that we assume is a mitzvah, saving a Jew, army, this elite part of the Jewish people called yeshiva bachers, we're going to call them Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, they're exempt. Even though it's a mitzvah that can't be done by others, even though they do every other mitzvah, Shevet Levi, exempt. Why? Because Shevet Levi is exempt from fighting. Let's see. The Mishnah in Sota lists a bunch of people that do not have to go to fight a war that's not a milchemet mitzvah, which we will define, but rather a milchemet reshut, an optional war. The king of Israel decides one day we're going to go to war because the various borders of Israel are not big enough. We need to enlarge the borders for whatever reason. So he does the procedure to go in an optional war. And because it's an optional war, there's more exemptions. And one of the exemptions, says the Mishnah in Sota, is a person that has aveiros, a person like this, a person like that, first year marriage. And then the Mishnah lists off the people that don't go home. And amongst them are Almana Kohen Gadol, Grusha V'Chalutza Kohen Etyot. Amongst the people that go home are people with aveiros, but certain aveiros that you did do not exempt you. So you go up to the commander and say, I have to go home. Why can't you fight? I did aveiros. What aveiros did you do? Spoke Lashon Hara, ate without a bracha. I am a Kohen and I married a woman that I'm not allowed to marry. Almana l'kohen gadol, grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hetyot. Comes along the commander, looks in his manifesto. No, sorry, that's not a big enough aveira. Back in line. What do we see from here? That a member of the tribe of Levi, Kohen, does fight. And not just in a milchemet mitzvah, but in an optional war, in a milchemet reshut. Not to mention that in a milchemet mitzvah, which we will define, the Gemara says, afilu chatan michadro vekala michupata, even a bride and groom go out to fight. Both a man and a woman go out to fight. Comes along the Gilyon in the name of the Aruch and says, vekol shekein talmidei chachamim, in an optional war, a first year marriage, the groom goes home. In a war that's a milchemet mitzvah, which we will define, the Aruch says not only doesn't a year, first year marriage groom go home, but the groom that just got married, coming out of the wedding canopy, together with his bride, goes to war. Comes along the Aruch and adds, and definitely talmidei chachamim, namely, every yeshiva bacher. I don't think I have to add anything to those words. The Karen Ora on the Gemara comes along and says, "Then a milchemet mitzvah kol yotzim, in a milchemet mitzvah, not an optional war, but an obligatory war, everyone goes. The afilu talmidei chachamim tzrichim lehibatel milimudam, and even the talmidei chachamim, the scholars, have to stop learning in order to go out to war." So just in case you thought that Shevet Levi, this elite tribe, does not have to go out to war, even though in general they have to do mitzvot, but maybe war not, comes along these sources and says explicitly, the Kohen goes out to fight, the Kol Shekein Talmidei Chachamim. The Yerushalmi says that what's a milchemet mitzvah, and says what happened in a milchemet mitzvah, in a milchemet chovah, in the words of the Yerushalmi, the opposite of an optional war is an obligatory war, milchemet chovah. The Gemara explains in the Yerushalmi in Sota, and I quote, Rabbi Simon v'Rabbanan, Rabbi Simon, Rabbi Biribi. What's Rabbi Biribi? The Pnei Moshe, which is like the Rashi on the Yerushalmi, explains, Afilu Rabban ben Rabban Yotze. Even the rabbi, the son of the rabbi, goes out to war. Again, bringing out what the Bavli said, even rabbis, sons of rabbis, go out to fight. Dorash Rabbah, mipnei nane enash asa, mipnei shena asa anigariya b'talmidei chachamim. So many, many have quoted this Gemara and said, why was Asa the king punished? Because he made a platoon out of talmidei chachamim. He went into the yeshiva. He took a whole bunch of talmidei chachamim. He put green uniforms on them and he made them fight. And he got punished for it. From here we learn, you don't draft yeshiva students. Okay, look, a source is a source. Masechet Sota, Daf Yud, Amud Aleph. Says the Marsha, Once upon a time, we always learned stories in the Gemara with the Maharsha. You don't just quote a story. Not to mention that we don't paskin halacha based on a story, but if a story is quoted, let's see what the Maharsha, who's the premier storyteller, mefaresh, interpreter, says. I quote, "Afal gav de mimilchemet mitzra amrina na kol yotzin afilu chatan nechadro." Even though in an obligatory war, everyone goes, even the chatan, the groom from his wedding canopy. Hacha, here, lav milchemet mitzvah, yeah. Here wasn't a milchemet mitzvah, an obligatory war, but rather an optional war. Okay. So why is it that Asa was punished? Asa was punished because in an optional war, he took out the Talmidei Chachamim. From here we learn that in an obligatory war, you don't take out the Talmidei Chachamim. Excuse me? In an optional war, you don't take the Talmidei Chachamim. In an obligatory war, you do. So again, don't quote sources out of context. The source is there. The Maharsha explains we're talking about a Milchemet Reshut. In a Milchemet Reshut, you don't take Talmidei Chachamim out of the base Medrash. But in a Milchemet Mitzvah, an obligatory war, you do. Shai? Now comes the main McCoy. After 46 minutes of this year, there's an elite part of the Jewish people named Shevet Levi, that even though the Gemara said what it said, they say with the Rambam says that Shevet Levi doesn't go to war, and so too anyone that wants to sign on, even though he's not part of Shevet Levi. So every yeshiva bacher got a membership card in Shevet Levi, and they don't go to war. Again, the distinction I made between Milchemet Mitzvah, Milchemet Reshut is not usually said, for some reason, beyond my comprehension. But let's assume, for the sake of argument for the next 2 minutes, that Shevet Levi does not go to war according to this source in the Rambam. It's a famous source, right side of the page, in Ilchot, Shemitah, and Yovel. Excuse me, the left side of the page. No, the right side of the page. The Rambam says, "V'lo Shevet Levi bilvad." Not only Shevet Levi. Ela kol ish ve'ish mikol ba'ei olam. Anyone ashan advaru choto. Anyone that wants to be someone lehibader la'amot lifnei Hashem l'sharto lovdo. Whoever wants to be different from everyone and just serve God. And this person is parak mi'al tzavaro olach hashbon otarabim. He is not going to be worried about making a living and everything else and how to build a house and how to make a mortgage payment. He is going to dedicate himself just to serving God. This person can be part of Shevet Levi. And these people do not go out to war. Finished. And every time you speak to someone from the ultra-religious community, they will inevitably quote this particular Rambam in Hilchot Shemitah and Yovel, Perek Yud Gimel, 13th chapter, subdivision Yud Gimel. Yud Gimel, Yud Gimel, very easy to remember. For reasons that are beyond me, they don't like to quote just one halacha prior. V'lama lo zacha Levi benachalat Eretz Yisrael? Why is it that the tribe of Levi didn't get a portion in the land of Israel? Because Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, had two jobs. Number one, to serve the Jewish people in the Beis HaMikdash. And number two, to actually paskin halacha and teach Torah to the Jewish people. Therefore, they did not get a inheritance. They were divided around the land of Israel. In every single tribe, they had a bunch of Levium, whose job was to be spiritual leaders, and obviously a whole chunk of them served in the Beis HaMikdash. Makes sense. Lefikach huvdalu midarkei ha'olam. Therefore, they were distinct. Lo orchim milchama k'shar Yisrael ve'lo nochalim. They do not do war like the rest of the Jewish people, and they do not inherit in the land. Okay. That's the Rambam in Hilchot Shmita and Yovel, Perek Yud Gimel, Halacha Yud Bet, subdivision 12. So subdivision 12 and 13 say that these Shevet Levi are different. And number 13 says you can sign on. So, very simple, Yami Yeshiva Bocher, I sign on. I don't have to go to war. I don't have to go to war. I don't have to train in the army. And that's it. End of story. Okay. Very nice. Number one. End of story is if the Rambam was the only source and everything I said until now doesn't exist. But we all know that's not the case. And I think it's an insult to anyone's intelligence when you go ahead and you say the Rambam said so, end of story. What do you mean the Rambam said so, end of story? The Rambam did have a vision that he would have his 14 books of the Yad Chazakah, his halachic magnum opus, be the only book on our shelf outside of the Tanakh. It didn't work. The Jewish people paskined otherwise. So we have one source in the Rambam, and that's it. We don't have anything else. That's the way we paskin halacha. Number two, the Rambam himself seems to contradict himself. In his same Yad Chazakah, in Hilchot Melachim, he says, "Hamachzir et grushato, v'ma'ares isha ha'asura alav, kigon almanah kohen gadol grushav ha'chalutzah kohen yod mamzirah v'tadah Yisrael, bat Yisrael mamzer natin, eino chozer." Says the Rambam, if you're someone that did averas, you're not supposed to go to that optional war. And amongst them, he quotes a bunch of kohanim that did things that they're not supposed to do. Almanah l'kohen gadol, grushav ha'chalutzah kohen yod, exactly the Mishnah we quoted. Mamzeret v'netina le'Yisrael, bat Yisrael mamzer v'latin, etc., etc. If the Rambam says that a Kohen doesn't go to war, why would he even bring this? A Kohen doesn't go to war, period. So if the Kohen doesn't go to war, why are you telling me that these people who are online to go to an optional war have to stay online? I thought a Kohen from the tribe of Levi doesn't go to war. More than that, in the same Hilchot Shmitam v'Yovel, in the same Perek, Perek Yud Gimel, comes along the Rambam and says in Halacha Yud Tin Yud Aleph is exactly before Yud Bet and Yud Gimel that I quoted earlier. Kol Shevet Levi Musarin Shelo Yinchalu Beretz Kenan. Vechein Hein Musarin Shelo Yitchu Chelek Babiza B'Sha'a Shekopshin Et Heharim. Shevet Levi does not inherit in the land of Israel, in addition to which they don't take from the booty of war at the time that they inherit, that they capture the land of Israel. At the time that they capture the cities. Let me ask you a question. If they don't go out to war, how do they capture the cities? What, they imagine it? So the same Rambam that said Shevet Levi doesn't do anything, doesn't go to war, nothing, is the same Rambam that said in an optional war, they don't get an exemption. And this is the same Rambam that said that when and if they go and they capture their cities, they don't take from the booty of war. So obviously the Rambam needs an explanation. This is not the first time that the Rambam needs an explanation. Many people make a living on explaining a Rambam that disagrees with his own Rambam. That's called the Stira in a Rambam. So we have to explain it. But don't quote just one source and go to sleep. The Rambam is 14 books, and he wrote many, many things. And you have to look at the entire picture. And now we have to build an actual puzzle that makes sense. So the Rambam says in one place, Shevet Levi doesn't go to war. And in another place, he says that even a Kohen that did an Avera doesn't get an exemption, not just from a Mechemet Mitzvah, an obligatory war, but from a Mechemet Reshut, a war that's an optional war. Not to mention the fact that the Rambam says that when Shevet Levi captures Kofshin, their cities, they Don't go ahead and take the booty. Well, let's explain it. And I'm not the first person that came up with this. Many achronim try to explain the Rambam. Let's begin right at the right side with one of the most, I would say, non-modern Orthodox, non-religious Zionist Jews, the Gris Soloveitchik. He was the uncle of the Rav Soloveitchik that I've quoted and so many have quoted from the modern Orthodox community. I would say the father of the modern Orthodox community in America, whose yahrzeit is also on Chol HaMoed Pesach. And that is the Gris Soloveitchik, Zichrono Levracha. What's called the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav, in his book on the, not on the Rambam, but what's called the stencil, namely what his students actually wrote in his name, so a little less than his own writings, namely not as reliable than what the master himself wrote, brings this particular contradiction in the Rambam. On the one hand, they go out. On the other hand, they don't go out. On the other hand, even a groom goes out. How do you explain it? So he says the following. It's not that they're totally exempt from going out to war. When they were needed at a time of war, even the tribe of Levi went out to war. But the Rambam says, if possible, lechatchila, try not to take that tribe. It's better that when the war happens, you don't go to Shevet Levi first to enlist them, enlist everyone else. And if you still need them, they will come to war. It's better that they stay back to teach Torah, Paskin Halacha, work in the Beis HaMikdash. And if you still need them, if there's still a need for these particular Jews, then by golly, you enlist them too. Ach bevadai, im yitzrichim lakohanim b'arichat ha-milchama, gam hem ha-yu yotzim. Therefore, says the Rambam, Kohanim that did sins, of course they went to war. That was a situation where they were needed. How did they go ahead and not take from the booty of the cities that they captured? Of course they captured their cities. That was one of those wars that they were needed. And what does the Rambam mean when he says you don't draft them? That means in the best situation when you have enough soldiers without them. In other words, according to the Gris Soloveitchik, anti-Zionist, you don't draft yeshiva students if you don't need them. But if the IDF says we need these bodies, this is not an agenda item. This is not a political agenda. This is the IDF saying we need more soldiers, then you draft them. That's why the Rambam doesn't contradict himself. In one place it says preferable. In the other place he says, and these are the situations when they were needed. And there's many situations in the history of the Jewish people when they were needed. That's the way the Gris Soloveitchik, far from being a Zionist, I should say, explained it. Rav Kook, more in the Zionist camp now, died in 1935, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Kook, explains the Rambam a little differently. And he says as follows. Many times in history, the Jewish people did not go out to war as a group, but rather one tribe went out to war. When that happened, they didn't usually go out to war themselves. They asked a neighboring tribe, hey, can you join us? Look and say for Shoftim, this happened more than once. In that situation, says the Rambam, according to Rav Kook, you don't ask Shevet Levi to join you. Even though Shevet Levi had encampments in all the tribes, you don't go to them and say, give us a few. Their job is to paskin halacha, teach Torah, and work in the Beis HaMikdash. But, and I quote, Shekol Yisrael yotzin lamilchama, mechayovim gam hem latzeit. When all the Jewish people go to war, like on October 7th and since then even they go out to war. Umilchama shekla Yisrael, zoti gam ken avodat Hashem, shel kol mishu miyuchad yoter laavodat Hashem, hu shayach la yoter mishakol la'am. And then the Rav Kook adds that whoever is more involved in Avodat Hashem, whoever is more involved in the worship of God, and who's more involved in the worship of God than Shevet Levi, they work in the Beis HaMikdash, they paskin halacha, they teach Torah, they're the ones that are the most involved in war, because these are the ones that are the most involved in serving God. That when all of Israel are going out to war for the benefit of God's people, the Jewish people, they're the ones that, of course, went out to war. So when the Rambam says you don't take Shevet Levi, it's only when one tribe went out to war and they needed a little help. But when all of Israel go out to war, when there's an existential threat on the Jewish people as there is today, then even Shevet Levi goes to war. And as we saw, Kol Shekein Talmidei Chachamim. So according to the Gris Soloveitchik, you don't ask Shevet Levi to join you unless you need them. And the IDF clearly says we need more bodies. According to Rav Kook, you don't ask Shevet Levi to come to war if it's just one tribe. But if all of Israel goes to war, you, by golly, they join. And not only do they join because they're the most closest to God. And finally, Rav Rabinovich, the Chavon HaLevrach. Rav Rabinovich was a Rav in America, eventually Montreal, eventually England, and eventually the Rosh Yeshiva of Birkat Moshe in Ma'ale Adumim. I never learned by him. I'm privileged that my son is learning in his yeshiva. He died not right when my son got to his yeshiva. He got to see him once or twice, but he was already elderly and towards the end. In any case, we're talking about a major Talmud Chacham that I have to one day really analyze. We're talking about one of the most amazing Talmid Chachamim of the 20th into the 21st centuries, who was both the Lamdan as well as a Posek. And in his book on the Rambam, which is a Perush on the Rambam called Yad Pshuta, it sounds like a very beautiful Perush, you know, simple hand, but far from simple. But when you read it, you sometimes say, hey, why didn't I think of that? He writes as follows to explain this contradiction of the Rambam. Once again, Shevet Levi doesn't go out to war, and two examples in the Rambam where they did, says Rav Rabinovich. Ela Barur, Sheilu Aita Dato Shen Levim Yotzim LaMilchama Klal Aya Omer Lorochim Milchama Velo Yoter. If the Rambam really would have believed that Shevet Levi doesn't go out to war, he would have written, they don't go out to war. Meaning we wouldn't have been sitting here for the last 15 minutes trying to figure out the Rambam. The Rambam would have said, they don't go to war. Finished. Why do we have to go and analyze and subcategorize and whatnot? Ma pesher abitui olchin mirchama ki Yisrael. Why did the Rambam say in Hilchot Shmita v'Yovel, the famous ones that everyone quotes, that ultimately lo orchin milchama ki Yisrael, they do not do war like the rest of Israel? That's what the Rambam said. He didn't say lo orchin milchama, they don't go to war. Rather, they don't do war like the rest of the Jewish people. In other words, if I can take an analogy, what the Rambam said wasn't you don't eat kidneyot, but rather he said they don't eat kidneyot like the rest of the Jewish people. Ooh, do they eat peanuts? Did they eat kidneyot oil? You already understand that there's going to be a little bit of a yotzi min haklal, you know, the exceptions to the rule when you go ahead and say, they didn't do a war like the rest of Israel, says Rav Rabinovich the following, Kavanato kan lahagid laneemar ba'alacha kodemet. Namely, what the Rama meant was what he said earlier, what I quoted. Lama benachalat ha'aretz ha'muftachat ein dinam ki Yisrael. How come when they give out the land, they don't have the same halacha like all the tribes? Afapi Shehem yotzim mimachayem lichbosh et ha'aretz. Ha'evdelu bazeh. How come even though they go out to war and they capture the land together with all their brothers, they do not get an inheritance? Yisrael lochin nilchama kedei linchol et ha'aretz. The Jewish people go out to war, they capture the land, and then they get part of the land. In other words, they capture, they get it. They live there. Ma she'en kein shevet Levi. Ah, shegam orchim nilchama. Einam kishar Yisrael, sha'arei hem einam nochalim et haaretz ve'einam zochin la'atzmam bekoach gufam ve'lama nishtana dinam mishar achihem b'pnei shem chel Hashem ve'hem hem amorim me'ha'am. Says Rav Rabinovich, the Jewish people go out to war, all of them. However, when the war is over, you got two camps. You got the Jewish people that the land they captured, they inherit. And then you got Shevet Levi that the land they capture, they don't inherit. Wow. So what happens? They get divided up around Israel. Why? Because their job is to teach Torah, Paskin Halacha, and work in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, the Rambam, when he said they go out to war, they don't have exemptions when they do Averas, of course they go out to war. When he said Lo Orchin Milchama Kishar Yisrael, he means they go out to war. They just don't go out to war like the rest of the Jewish people. The rest of the Jewish people go out to war and capture and inherit. They go out to war, capture, but don't inherit. You can agree or disagree with Rav Rabinovich. It seems to be a simple reading of the Rambam. In our case, it's no question in my mind the Rambam contradicts himself. There's no question in my mind that the Rambam clearly says that they do not go out to war like the rest of Israel. On the other hand, he clearly says that they did go out to war, and there's no exemptions for Kohanim that do Averas, even in an optional war. So how is it that we explain the Rambam? The Greek Soloveitchik said, L'chadchila, don't take Shevet Levi, but if you need them, take them. And today the IDF says, we need them. Forget about the agendas of politicians. We need them. Rav Kook says, when a one tribe or two tribes or three tribes have a local war, you don't take them. But when all of Israel has a war, not only do you take them, you should take them. They're the closest to God. And Rav Rabinovich says, they always go to war. It's just that they don't inherit like the rest of the Jewish people. Whatever the explanation is, it's clear that these three Gedolei HaPoskim said that the Shevet HaLevi, this tribe of Levi, went to war. And why did they all assume that Shevet Levi went to war? Because the Rambam clearly says it in one place. But in another place, maybe you could infer otherwise. These poskim did not infer otherwise from the other place. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because we have so many examples in Tanakh that says explicitly that Shevet Levi and Talmidei Chachamim that had a card member in Shevet Levi went to war. So they couldn't have assumed that. So they had to explain the Rambam, and they did. They broke their heads and they explained it. And let me give you examples. The first war against the Jewish people was the war of Amalek. We're obligated to remember it. Maybe we're obligated to remember it for so many reasons, amongst them this, lest you think that rabbis and great Jews don't go out to war. So who was a greater Jew, a bigger Talmid Chacham than Yehoshua bin Nun? Yehoshua bin Nun, it says about him, Lo Yamish mitoch ha'oel, he did not leave the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't say that about me. It doesn't say that about great rabbis. It doesn't say that about any yeshiva bachur today in any yeshiva. It says that about Yehoshua bin Nun in God's Torah dictated word for word, letter to letter to Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning God said Yehoshua bin Nun is the ultimate yeshiva bachur. So a war breaks out between the Jewish people and Amalek. End of Parshat B'Shalach. Vayavo Amalek. Vayilachem em Yisrael b'Rifidim. Amalek came and fought against the Jewish people in Rifidim. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do? So if a certain segment of the Jewish people, taking one little Rambam, not looking at the others, were correct, the last person that you would have gone to was Yehoshua, because he's a Talmid Chacham, and he's learning, V'lo yamish mitoch ha'oel. Where do they go to? Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua. Moshe says to Yehoshua, Bechar lanu anashim, get an army together, Vitzei hilachem ba'amalek, and go out to fight Amalek. You know why I know these psukim in my heart? Because we don't read them once a year in Parshat B'Shalach. We read them twice a year. Once in Parshat B'Shalach, And then on the morning of Purim. As a matter of fact, there's an entire sugya, how are we allowed to read this on the morning of Purim? It's only 9 psukim. A leining should not be less than 10 psukim. Such lamdas on this leining, and no one looks at the obvious. We ask the biggest Talmud Chacham in the Torah, that God said was the biggest Talmud Chacham in the Torah, to go ahead and to fight. By golly, I thought you don't draft Talmidei Chachamim. And the Torah goes on to say, Vayachalosh Yehoshua et Amalek ve'et Amal lefi charef, and he was successful. I don't recall anyone going and reprimanding Moshe. Why did you ask Yehoshua to fight? I don't remember a medrash saying, you shouldn't have done that. He's a Talmid Chacham, he's learning in yeshiva. You should have asked some lowlife to do it. Ramban. The Ramban comes along and says, "V'hatam shetziva Moshe Yehoshua li'ilachem ba'amalek." The fact that he asked Yehoshua to go fight in Amalek, and he, Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't go himself, so that he can go ahead, as the Pesukim say, to go up to that mountain, put his hands up, and pray for the success of the Jewish people. Namely, the Ramban assumes that Moshe should have gone and fight too. Moshe is not a card carrying member of Shevet Levi. He's part of Shevet Levi. Vayikach ish mi Beit Levi, vayelech ish mi Beit Levi, vayikach et Beit Levi, vatara isha vatelet ben, second chapter in Sefer Shmot. His father and mother are from Shevet Levi. They gave birth to Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is part of Shevet Levi. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to Ramban, I have to go wake up in the morning, take a coffee. It wasn't enough. I have to take a second coffee. Make sure it's real sugar and not fake sugar. And try to figure out how come Moshe Rabbeinu was not the one that went and fought Amalek. How come the Ramban didn't simply say, he's Shevet Levi, Shevet Levi, you don't touch? Because the Ramban too assumed that Shevet Levi goes and fights. And therefore, he had to explain, because Moshe Rabbeinu had a different job. He had to daven on the top of the mountain. And he goes on to explain why it was so important. The Sifri, the Midrash Halacha, on Sefer Bamidbar, says that in the Milchama, in the war against Midian, in Parshat Matot, that we read about towards the end of Sefer Bamidbar, it says, Lechol matot Yisrael tishlechu latzava, from all the matot you shall send to the army, lahavi et shifto shel Levi, including the tribe of Levi. So why is it that all these Rabbanim, the Gris Soloveitchik, the Raya Kuk, Rav Rabinovich, all of them didn't assume that the Rambam assumes that Shevet Levi didn't go to war? They had to explain the Rambam, because they knew all of this long before me. Namely, they went through the parshas every year. They knew Yehoshua went to war. They knew the Ramban says Moshe couldn't go to war because he had to daven. They didn't hear Moshe, the Ramban, say, oh, Moshe didn't go to war because he's Shevet Levi. Of course Leviim went to war. So they had to explain the Rambam in some way or another. But Leviim and Talmidei Chachamim, Moshe, Yehoshua, went to war. And if they didn't, they had to give an explanation why not. Nobody said, because they're Shevet Levi. So, to sum up, we've established since the beginning of this year that we were put on this earth not just to learn, but to do the mitzvot that we learn about. And only if the mitzvah could be done by others, maybe we don't have to do the mitzvah. Maybe. When the IDF says that's no longer the case, we need more and more and more able bodies, then the mitzvah can't be done by others. We went on to say that this applies basically when you learn Torah. Namely, when you learn Torah, there is no exemption of ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah, according to the Meiri and according to the Rambam. The only time that applies is in priyah or riviyah, having kids, and even there the Rambam says only to push it off, the hitacher, but not all the time. So, we are put on this earth to do mitzvahs, and if there's a mitzvah to save Jewish people, we have to do it if there's no one else to do it. If that's the case, do Talmidei Chachamim have to go to war? We saw a slew of sources saying 100%. We also saw a slew of sources saying that Kohanim that have averus go to optional wars. So, kol shekein, they probably go to obligatory wars. Does the Rambam believe that Shevet Levi went to war? We just spoke about it. We saw the famous source that everyone quotes. We saw the sources on the other side in the Rambam. And we explained, based on the Greek Soloveitchik, Rav Kook, and Rav Rabinovich, how to explain the Rambam. All said and done, did Levim go out to war? Did Tamitei Chachamim go out to war? We saw Yehoshua went to war. We saw Sifri saying that in the Milchama, in the war against Midian, Shevet Levi went to war. And we saw a Ramban saying Moshe should have gone to war, but he didn't because he had another job during the war against Amalek. So that being the case, we have one more question. We said at the beginning of Shir that you have to stop learning Torah to do a mitzvah. Either that's the reason we were put on earth, and if we don't do that, says the Yerushalmi, better, you shouldn't have been created. Or that maybe if the mitzvah could be done by others, it's okay to continue learning. But if the mitzvah can't be done by others, you have to do the mitzvah. Who said it's a mitzvah to go to the army? Who said it's a mitzvah to fight? Famous Rambam, who says explicitly. Now, why am I quoting the Rambam and not the Shulchan Aruch? I think it goes without saying that the Shulchan Aruch didn't live at a time in the 1500s where there was a Jewish army. He only wrote down the code of Jewish law for laws that applied to his time. He didn't deal with laws that didn't apply to his time. The Rambam wrote a code for all the laws for all time. He wrote a code for Hilchot Korban Pesach that we did not bring on Erev Pesach this year. He wrote a code for Hilchot Korbanot in general. And he wrote a code for Hilchot Melachim v'Melchamotehem, the laws of kings and their wars. Namely, we have a code of Jewish law for wars. And even wars are part of our worship of God. And comes along the Rambam, and this is what he says about going to war. En ha-melech nilcham tchila ela milchemet mitzvah. War is what the king does first. El milchemet mitzvah. Ve'ezehi milchemet mitzvah, ve'ezehi milchemet reshut. What's a milchemet mitzvah? And what's a milchemet reshut? Namely, what's the difference? Zo milchemet shivat amamim, o milchemet amalek. Uve'ezrat Yisrael miyatzar. Says the Rambam, what's a milchemet mitzvah? A milchemet mitzvah is either fighting the seven nations that were part of Israel way back when Yeshua was capturing this land. They don't exist today. A milchama against Amalek. Difference of opinion if they do exist today. And Ezrat Yisrael miyatzar shebaalihim. Helping Israel from those that come to destroy them. From those that come to destroy them. Hamas came in on October 7th to try to destroy. Helping them is a mitzvah. End of story. Says the Meiri, you may think that you need a king. After all, it says here in the Rambam, Ein ha-melech nilcham tchila. So maybe it's a milchemet mitzvah to help a Jew when a terrorist comes to kill him. But due respect, the Rambam's talking about Hilchot Melachim, laws of kings and their wars. We don't got a king today. We have a prime minister. We have a president. But a king we do not have. Says the Meiri, Kol milchama shemalchei Yisrael, any war that the kings of Israel or manhigehem nilchamim im oyveihem, hein milchemet mitzvah. Either the kings or their leaders. Or their leaders. Can't get more clear than that. Any leader of the Jewish people that calls war to help the Jewish people from those that are attacking them, ultimately is a milchemet mitzvah. And indeed, I brought here on the source sheet a slew of sources from the poskim of our generation. Rav Herzog, the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg, and of course Rav Ovadia Yosef, who all say that the war today against terrorists, anyone, take any time. Rav Herzog died before, I believe, 1959. Rav Waldenberg died already in the 2000s. And Rav Ovadia Yosef died, I think, 2014 or 2016. I forgot exactly when, or 2015. All of them say that, at the end of the day, the wars we're fighting today against terrorists and against armies is a milchemet mitzvah. I quote from Rav Waldenberg, "Hamilchama ha'achshavit po ba'artzeinu ha'kdosha," the current war in our holy land, he ledaat haramban milchemet mitzvah. And he repeats this in another tshuva. Rav Herzog said this in the 50s, and Rav Ovadia Yosef said this as well, and none of them say that because we don't have a king, it's not a milchemet mitzvah. So from this perspective, a milchemet mitzvah is to help Jews against those that come along and try to kill them. So we've established in this year very clearly that a Jew was put on this earth to do mitzvot, and even if he's learning, it's not an exemption unless the mitzvah can be done by others. And right now, the IDF made clear it can't. That being the case, if it's a milchemet mitzvah, they must go out to fight. And there's no exemption, not for Shevet Levi, and not for Talmidei Chachamim. However, there's one more source that many have quoted, and that is that Talmidei Chachamim don't need protection. Namely, maybe non-religious Jews need to fight because they need to be protected from terrorists. And maybe religious Zionists need to go out to war because they need to be protected. And maybe even Haredim, the so-called ultra-religious Jews, need to go out to fight because they need to be protected. This is one group that doesn't need to fight. Talmidei Chachamim. Why? Because Talmidei Chachamim don't need to be protected. As I quote from the Gemara in Baba Basra, Dav Chet Amud Aleph, De Rabbanan Lo Tzrichei Niturata. Talmidei Chachamim do not need anyone to guard them. And this is Paskin in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, Davar Shu Tzarich L'Shmirat Ha'ir. If you need something to guard the city, Kigon Chomat Ha'ir U'Migdalotea U'Sachar HaShomrim. If you need to build a wall around the city to guard it. Or if you need to have a Shin Gimel, as we call it in Israel, a nice guard post to guard the city. Lo hayu chayavin latent lahem klum. The Talmid HaChachamim don't have to contribute to that effort from their pockets. She'en tzrichim shmira, she'toratan shmiratam. The Torah guards them. Shulchan Aruch, kol advarim atzrichim l'shmirat ha'ir, lokchim mikol anshei ha'ir, va'afilu mehayitomim, chutz mitalmidei ha'chachamim, she'en talmid chacham tzrichim shmira, she'toratan meshamtam. So both in Yoredeya and Choshen Mishpot, the Shulchan Aruch says the key words, that Talmidei Chachamim don't need anyone to guard them because Toratan Shmiratam, the Torah guards them. The Torah guards them. So they don't need to go to the army. They don't need to be guarded from. Anyone who doesn't learn Torah, who's not a Talmid Chacham, needs to be guarded. But whoever's a Talmid Chacham doesn't. So I want to say two things. Number one, this is only replying to a Talmid Chacham. I'm not so sure that everyone learning in a yeshiva is already a Talmid Chacham. A Talmid Chacham is someone that really reached a level. Not every single person that ever is learning in a yeshiva with an open book already reached that level. But let's assume that there are a few. So they don't need to go to the army, according to this. Number two, comes along the Chasam Sofer, who again, we're not talking about someone who's a very modern Orthodox Jew. We're talking about the person who said Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, that anything new should not be incorporated into Jewish practice. Says the Chasam Sofer, Da'at kan lo kepatru rabbanan el mimas v'choma. We're only talking about an exemption from giving taxes, money, and from building a wall. Shehem mitzad galut Yisrael. Aval shmira kederech shemalchut nishmarim b'malchuyot acherot. But guarding them from other forces outside of their lands, namely guarding this kingdom from other kingdoms, gam tamid chacham chayav. Even a Talmid Chacham is obligated. Namely, even a Talmid Chacham has to give money in order for there to be an army. Kedemuchach ba Mordechai, demati ba Yushalmi, etc., etc. In other words, according to the Chasam Sofer, we're talking about within a certain community, you build a wall in order to have what we would call protection from robbers and things like that. But to have protection from being captured, namely, Hamas should not come into our kibbutzim in order to take captives. Even a Talmid Chacham has to be part of that effort. So there is no exemption from going to the army. The army is there not to protect from ganovim, not to protect from robbers. The army is there to protect from being taken captive. The Chashukei Chemet quotes from Rav Elyashiv, and I don't have to tell you who Rav Elyashiv was, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Again, not a religious Zionist. And says Rav Elyashiv, "Dechol ma shetachmidei chachamim pturim, haynu kishadayin lo ba mikata gnevot, she'az toratan tagen shelo yivgvu." We're talking about having protection from theft. Then their Torah guards them. Aval kishamakai chela. When we're talking about already, not there's going to be a theft of genevas, there's going to be some sort of a pandemic of robbers that are coming, then we say it won't happen to Talmidei Chachamim. But once the Makai Chela, once every single night another person in the community says, "I was robbed," the Haganavim Ishtaltu Al HaMakom Umikirim Kol Mevo'otav. Already every night people come in and say they know where you live, they know who went away for Shabbos, and they come into their house. Ain't somchim al hanes v'chayavim lishtatef. So Rav Elyashiv is even more machmir than the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer gave a carte blanche exemption to Talmid Chachamim from theft and those kinds of things. He comes along and says, yeah, they have that until it starts. But when my neighbor and his neighbor already got robbed from, then it's already dangerous. When it's already dangerous, they don't have any sort of exemption. Because ain't some chim al hanes, you don't rely on a miracle. In other words, when we're already in a dangerous situation, as we are now in Israel, there is absolutely no exemption to any Talmid Chacham. So to sum up, every Jew is obligated in all mitzvot. One of those mitzvot is Izrat Yisrael Miyad Tsar, helping Jewish people from those that are trying to destroy Jewish people. That is a mitzvah. And Jews are obligated to do mitzvot even if they are learning Torah. From this perspective, even Talmidei Chachamim are obligated to close their Gemara and do mitzvot if that mitzvah cannot be done by others. From this perspective, they have to enlist into the army and help to save Jews from those that want to destroy them. You may say they're part of Shevet Levi. We showed that a Shevet Levi fought, including Talmidei Chachamim that were card-carrying members of that Shevet Levi. And B, we saw that many have tried to explain the Rambam because he himself says that they went to fight. And finally, that final source where Talmidei Chachamim don't need to be guarded, we saw that both the Chatam Sofer and Rav Elyashiv, two who are not members of the modern Orthodox community, said explicitly that that only applies A, to theft and those kinds of things, and B, maybe even there, if there's already a pandemic that started, it doesn't apply anymore. And I'd like to conclude with the following. It's Sefer Shoftim in Shirat Dvorah, a famous shira that we're going to read, God willing, later on in the year, not this year, but in Parshat B'Shalach, when we read Az Yashir, not on Shvi Shel Pesach, but the next time. Dvorah reprimands certain Shvatim for not coming to help the Jewish people in war, and says very harsh things. Ki lo ba'u le'ezrat Hashem ba'giborim, that they did not come to help God. Namely, it's not just a war against the Jewish people, it's a war against God. Says the Chazon Ish, and again, not a card-carrying member of the modern Orthodox religious Zionist community. Says the Chazon Ish, that when the Gemara says, afilu chatan michadro, when it says even a groom from the wedding canopy goes to war, Lo ayri bizman shetzrichin leezratan l'nitzachon ha-milchama. It does not apply to a time when you're needed to help in order to win a war. Dezeh pshita. Because that's clear. De'bishvil pikuach nefesh v'atzalat ha'am kulam chayavim. What do you mean? You need a pasuk and a gemara to tell me that during war I have to go out and help my brothers and sisters? If there's a terrorist attack, I have to go out and help. Period. That's pikuach nefesh. Someone gets a heart attack, I pick up a phone and call an ambulance. I need a gemara to tell me that? Of course I have to do that. So what does the gemara mean that even a groom from the wedding canopy goes to war? What's the chiddush, if you will, in that statement? Est the chazal nish. Ela, afilu bizman she'ein sorech ela lemispar mesuyam. Even when you just need a certain number of soldiers, say you need 500,000 soldiers only to fight this war and to win. You had the right to take a groom from the wedding canopy. She'ein lahachosrim shum zchut b'melchemet mitzvah v'chein b'melchemet reshut she'ein p'turin el bizman she'ein nitzachon talui b'hem she'mispar etzava she'tzorach b'hem yesh biladan aval im yesh tzorach b'hem chayavim lavo le'ezrat acheihem. Says the Chazon Ish, the chiddush of the Gemara is that you can take, when you need a bunch of soldiers, even a groom from the wedding canopy. Namely, if you don't know how many soldiers you need, everyone goes. But if you know you need 500,000, you can take everyone. You don't have to start saying, is he a groom? Is he a Talmid Chacham? Is he a Shevet Levi? You can take everyone. Both in a Milchemet Mitzvah, and even in an optional war. Why? And I quote these words in conclusion. Im yesh tzorech bahen, chayavin lavo le'ezrat yi'acheihem. If there's a need for them, they must come to help their brethren. If there's a need for them, they must come to help their fellow Jews. This is their, our obligation. And I believe that there's no holier obligation than this obligation right now. So says the Chazon Ish that the chiddush of the Gemara is that when there's a war, you don't have to be so medayek who you take. You can take everyone. And especially in a milchemet mitzvah, which is what we're in since October 7th. And I think we have to stop talking about obligations and start talking about what an amazing merit it is to live in a generation and to live in a place in which we are living now. To live in a place in which we have finally been after so many thousands of years of exile, where we can actually fulfill this mitzvah. The mitzvah of lavo le'ezrat acheihem, to come to help our brothers and sisters in distress. That's what happened on October 7th when so many jumped from their homes to do that. That's what happened since. And I hope and pray that so many more will join this effort so that we will live in a land in which there will be peace, there will be prosperity, and we will no longer have a Pesach in which we will have to have yahrzeits of such tragic murders as that of Lucy and Maya and Rina. Their memory should always be a blessing for us, for the Jewish community in which they lived, for the land that they loved, and for the Jews around the world. And I hope and pray that in their merit, so many more Jews will join the effort to save Jews in distress until such time when this mitzvah will be obsolete, when this mitzvah will be one of the past. Because we do have a promise of lo yisagoy el goy cherev, v'lo yimnadu od milchama. There'll be a time in which will there be no more wars. And when will that time come? A time that we talk about every Shabbos and Yom Tov morning in the Pesukei Dezimra. Sur Meira Ve'asei Tov. When we stay away from evil and when we do good, when we stay away from doing Averas, and when we do all the mitzvot of God, including this mitzvah, then Bakesh Shalom Ve'rot Fehu will be able to seek peace, and hopefully it will run after us. Wishing everyone a Chag Sameach, and may we be Zoche to its Simcha.